Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Gwyneth Hoyle, biographer, researcher, and travel writer. So writing the biography of Isabel was a new adventure for you. Tell us about how you started the research on that and where your inquiries led you.
I went online. By this time, we had the internet, and I found the archival index from Edinburgh, the Royal Scottish Archives, and I found they had a huge amount of material. They had 80 years of diaries.
Oh, wow.
And then they had tons of material more. So my husband and I were going to be in Scotland, and we put a day aside to go and see whether it was worth doing. And at the same time, we found the house that she had lived in, which was like a baronial castle on a small scale. And we met a few people. And then I came home and thought about it. And the archives were going to be closed for a year after I visited them. So I came home and I got all of her books, and I worked through those, and I got her. She wrote for the National Geographic as well. And so I began working on with what I had, and then went back to Scotland, and both my husband and I together, and we sat in the archives for 2 weeks reading. The diaries were the really least interesting part.
Oh.
They were small, you know, small daily diaries. But the journals and the letters and all the other things were absolutely fabulous. So it was a very compressed time, but really interesting. So.
I guess you had to take an awful lot of notes to back with you.
Yeah.
And what about Isabel herself? What makes her so, you know, you talked about her amazing adventures, but what makes her special? How would you describe her character?
It was the way that she just set off, decided she would do something, didn't really do a lot of planning, but just went straight ahead and did it.
Sort of the confidence.
When she made her most astonishing trip, which was across the top of Alaska and into Canada, she started out without really a plan in mind. She came across the ocean in I think it was not a liner, but a commercial boat, went through the Panama Canal, went up the west coast, and arrived in Vancouver about May. Now she's heading for the high Arctic without any plan. She went up the coast of British Columbia in the regular boat, got to Dawson City, spent a little time there, and then found a boat going down the Yukon River, which comes right out at the coast of the Pacific coast of Alaska. Well, it was going quite slowly, and the time was getting on. It was already, I think it was in June by then. So she got off at Fairbanks and took a flight to Nome, Alaska. Well, how to get from Nome? She looked around for a boat going north. And finally, she found a little tiny trading boat that had room for one passenger. I mean, it was cramped. And three men. And so she went aboard. That was wonderful. Got up. They got finally to the point at the top of Alaska, which is Point Barrow. That's the most northerly point. And the ice was closing in. And one of the men on the boat said he had a friend who would take her farther, who lived farther along the coast. So he introduced her. He took her along. She was stuck in his cabin for 2 months until it froze up. And then she went on from there by dog team. She got to Herschel Island, which is in Canada. And each day she had to find another dog team to take her. And finally she got to Iqaluit in the Northwest Territories.
Wow. She just sort of trusted that the next thing would come along.
I can tell you about that in the part I'm going to read.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
But it was the way that she just trusted that she could get there.
Hmm. And did she make any contribution to people's knowledge of the Arctic from her travels?
Well, she did collect plants all the way. And she collected artifacts, particularly in Greenland. And it was because she was a plant collector that she could actually get into Greenland, because Greenland was a closed country in those days. The Danes wouldn't allow anybody to visit Greenland unless they had a scientific reason.
Oh.
So it was her plant collecting that got her into Greenland.
Hmm. Now, you obviously enjoyed writing her biography and so on, because you went on to write another book set in the north, The Northern Horizons of Guy Blanchet.
Right.
So what drew you to that one?
I love archives, and I'd always been intrigued by Guy Blanchet, who seemed to be in the north all the time. I think what intrigued me in the archives was a letter he was writing to his wife about 1924, saying, "It feels strange to think this is probably my last time in the Arctic." Well, that man was still going into the Arctic in the 1950s. That's what intrigued me about him.
Oh, wonderful. Well, perhaps you could read to us again. Are you going to read from Flowers in the Snow again?
Yes, I will. This is Isabel arriving with the trader who had brought her from Point Barrow. She was arriving, it's a little tiny place on the coast of Alaska, and it's east of Point Barrow on the way to the Canadian border. Winter was at hand. I was a prisoner upon a snow-covered strip of shingle about a mile long and scarcely any part more than 100 yards wide, washed on all sides by the sea. Escape, had I desired it, was impossible after the first few days, during which the lagoon between the sandspit and the mainland was still open. Arriving at Gus Massick's cabin, locked in by the ice, Isabel was in a compromising position for a single woman traveling alone. She had only Gus's word given when they met that she would be treated like a lady, but in no way had he undermined that promise during the journey. Gus's house was clean, cozy, and well-built, lit by two skylights. It was approached through a canvas entry and storehouse, with wooden compartments for the four sled dogs. The subject of suitable accommodations for Isabel until freeze-up made further travel possible was settled without hesitation. The question of where to put his lady boarder in a single-room cabin might have worried some men farther south, but it did not trouble Gus. The tentative suggestion that I, Isabel, might set up my camp bed in the canvas entry with the dogs brought a roar of, "What? And freeze to death? Nothing doing. Isn't this room plenty big enough?" Having arrived on Sandspit Island, Gus and Isabel had time to take stock of one another. "You took an awful chance traveling alone in these parts," said Gus. "I never take any chances," I said quite sincerely. "God always blazes my trail. I should not be here now if he hadn't." Gus, "You really believe that?" Isabel, "Absolutely." Gus, "God, well, that's all bunk. I don't believe in God. I believe in the 5-year plan. Didn't I tell you I was a Bolshevik?" Isabel, "Well, I'm a Christian, and I believe in eternity." Gus collapsed with a roar of laughter. "Well," he confessed handsomely, "you're the first lady I ever met, I guess."
Thank you, Gwyneth. We've been speaking with Gwyneth Hoyle, travel writer, researcher, and biography. Thanks for coming in today, Gwyneth.
Oh, you're welcome.
Where can listeners buy your books?
I think online.
Online?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I know that I've been told that this one is, it was the University of Nebraska printed it. And it was, they only print when they get orders
right
now.
Yeah. So you can go to an independent bookstore too and with the titles. So the titles are Flowers in the Snow and The Northern Horizons of
Guy Blanchet.
Guy Blanchet and Canoeing North into the Unknown.
Yeah.
Right. And readers, if you'd like to connect with us, you can send your comments, queries, or suggestions to our website, www.wordonthehills.com. While you're there, you might like to listen again to one of our older programs that is archived there. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, Sunday at 1 p.m., repeated on Thursdays at 1 a.m., right here on Northumberland 897, Truly Local Radio.